Hopefully y'all got my message that I sent out. And you did not come to class. You stayed in your nice warm dorms and your jammies on the sheets and watched a video. You're Cameron, right?
Yeah.
Thought so. So I did get your exams done, but I just haven't released them yet because one person in here hasn't taken it yet. So as soon as they take the exam, I will open them up and you can see what you did or how you did. All right, hold on. Dylan is here. Jaquan?
Jaquan.
Very good. Dylan, did you miss the last time we were together? Or did you come in late?
I think I came in late.
Yeah, he came in
late. I haven't missed any classes.
All right, I didn't think so. That's why I asked. I didn't automatically give you the red dot. All right, so if you watch the video, you know where we left off with the fall of Dien Bien Phu. If you have not watched the video yet, I think it's closed. But I will. I was told this morning that I didn't do the audio, so I'll rip the audio and I'll put it up online. But with the fall of Dien Bien Phu and the French strategy to try to trigger that big battle that changed the flow of things ended up failing, that caused a huge conundrum on this side of the pond. Ike. When he received word of the fall of Dien Bien Phu, he did not freak out. He did not lose his mind. I'm sure he didn't run around the White House in his bathrobe going like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Instead, he assessed it as the former Supreme Commander of the Allied Forces in Europe. Essentially, he understood that the United States was in a tough position. How far could he go to save Indochina? Americans vote in elections, and Americans are fickle when it comes to voting time. Could he risk getting the United States involved militarily? Because if we did, people are going to die. And would the American people be willing to sacrifice our blood and our treasure for this godforsaken country on the other side of the earth that very few people in 1954 in the United States could find on a map? Plus, if the United States uses military power and it gets involved in Indochina, it won't be able to be used elsewhere. But he was concerned, very concerned, about what would happen to Indochina because he believed in the domino theory. Essentially, he believed if they lost Vietnam, that means they're going to lose Laos, they're going to lose Cambodia, and that next domino could be Indonesia. And if Indonesia falls, does that mean New Zealand, Australia? Does that mean the Philippines? Does that mean Japan? How far could it go? Should we put boots on the ground to try to stabilize the position? Now, in his assessment of why the French failed, he definitely agreed that the French failed because they did not have full supremacy over the skies. They didn't have total air superiority. But when the French were asking for bailouts, I don't know, I don't think I mentioned it in the video. I think once I shut it off, I realized I forgot to mention it. There was actually calls when the siege of Dien Bien Phu was going on for the United States to fly unmarked American B-52s over Vietnam and start ground pounding. There was also discussion of potentially using an atomic bomb. But the military powers that be, including Eisenhower, were like, yeah, no, we're not going to nuke Vietnam. Due in part to how close it was to China and the Soviet Union. But to show you how close he came to possibly getting us involved before Dien Bien Phu collapsed, he actually engaged in a series of secret communications which weren't declassified until the 1990s, in which it shows that he actually reached out to Winston Churchill, who was back in the seat as being Prime Minister in England again. Churchill recognized the need to do something, but he basically replied, England had its own problems. It lost India in 1948. It lost the Suez Canal in Egypt in 1951. The communists seized the British bases in Malaysia. And in 1955, they were negotiating on the freedom of Sudan. So England was basically giving away its empires. Churchill basically said to Ike, I can't imagine the British people are going to go for us to get involved in a colonial war right when we're getting rid of our colonies. Ike also met with Congress leaders. And he asked them, how much would they tolerate? Well, both the D's and the R's, the leading Democrats and the leading Republicans that Eisenhower responded to, they all basically were alarmed by the idea of us getting involved. They were afraid of us intervening because they were afraid if we intervene, that could result in escalation. And since England and our other allies were not interested, they kind of were like, yeah, we're not going to do it by ourselves. So at the end of the day, even though the United States had time to move, in the end, Eisenhower just basically wrote it off. So by March, he basically decided we're not going to do anything and we're going to let the French fall in Dien Bien Phu. But they also drew a line in the sand. With the fall of Dien Bien Phu, the administration pivoted. They realized that France losing in Dien Bien Phu was only a minor setback. They also realized that if the French fell, that would cause the French to begin pulling out. And if the French got out of the way, that could possibly give an opportunity for the United States to get more involved, to basically implement the three-point plan that Truman came up with. Getting the Vietnamese in the help. Support the government of Bo Dai. And make this a battle of nationalism versus communism. And why? Well, Eisenhower saw the writing on the wall. Him and Dulles openly acknowledged that the communists aren't going to get all of Vietnam. That if the French pull out, there would be a settlement similar to Korea. That Vietnam would be divided into two separate countries. So, we may lose the North, but maybe we can entrench ourselves in the South, just like Korea. But Ike was determined not to do it by on our own. Instead, he proposed the creation of an alliance known as CETO, which is the Southeast Asian Treaty Organization. CETO, Southeast Asian Treaty Organization. And as you can see, it would be made up of the United States, the United Kingdom, France, New Zealand, Pakistan, the Philippines, Thailand, United Kingdom. Now, this would basically be the Asian version of NATO. The goal of this alliance was just like NATO, keep communism in check. So, nobody wants to do it alone, let's make an alliance. It's working in Europe, we can make it work in Asia. That wasn't a bad thing. But here is where they screwed up. Both Dulles and Eisenhower were absolutely convinced that the non-communist Vietnamese were essentially the same as the non-communist Koreans. In other words, that if given the opportunity to have their own country, that the Vietnamese people would in fact rise up and defend this new state. That they'd be willing to die for the cause. The South Koreans did. Ironically, one of the things we're going to cover when we start talking about the American involvement is that some of the fiercest allies that the United States had fighting in Vietnam were a group of South Korean Marines. The Vietnamese were terrified of them because the South Koreans, after dealing with the Korean War, were doing everything in their damn power to kill commies. But the problem was the South Vietnamese were not a people. They hated the French. They hated outsiders. They subscribed to the same version of Vietnamese nationalism that Ho Chi Minh had been preaching. So, they didn't care about this free world versus communism stuff. They just wanted to be left alone. Which basically meant that they did not want to die for this American cause. Questions? Two weeks before the fall of Dien Bien Phu, diplomats would meet in Geneva and they would hold a conference to deal with Indochina. If you recall, Dien Bien Phu fell on May 9th, so they were already there in negotiations when this collapse occurred. Needless to say, this would be a huge PR win for the Viet Minh, that they used as leverage to try to get more out of the division of Indochina. Because if you're negotiating from a position of strength, you tend to get more. Now, all of the big powers were there. United States was there, France was there, Great Britain was there, the Soviet Union was there, China was there. And of course, there were representatives from many of the smaller countries, including representatives from Laos, Cambodia, the Democratic Republic of Vietnam, and what would become South Vietnam. The goals of the conference: permanent settlement, to bring the Indochina War to an end, got ahead of myself because they had representatives. Bless you. All right. So, because you had all of these nations, because you had all of these leaders, because you had all of these opinions, what was the United States shooting for? Well, truth be told, Ike and Dulles was not really sure. On one hand, they wanted to convince the French to stay in long enough so that way the settlement could be made permanent. But on the other hand, they recognized that the French had lost. So how could you convince the French to stay after they lost? Would the French people put up for that? To make matters worse, what about the Cambodians or the Laotians or the Vietnamese? Did they want the French kicking around after the Viet Minh kicked their butts? As far as the Viet Minh, they just wanted to score a win. Ho Chi Minh would send one of his right-hand men, Phan Van Dong, who would go and negotiate on behalf of the DRV. Now, the Viet Minh's proposal, which was shot down, was that the Viet Minh, because they won the war, they should be given control over all of Indochina. So Ho Chi Minh should rule over the north, the south, Laos, and Cambodia. To which the Laotians and the Cambodians and the southern Vietnamese said no. As for the French were done. French Premier Pierre Mendès, he simply wanted to get out in a way that was dignified. Why? Because of this. Oh, wait, no, I thought I had something else. I guess not. It should say war is costly. I forgot to put it in. I get F. In the 8 years of the Indochina War, France lost 75,000 men. 75,000 men killed in action. And another 65,000 were injured. Now, as I alluded to you guys before and on the video, of course, many of the soldiers were not actually French. They were colonial soldiers. So of the 75,000, over 55,000 were either Africans or members of the Foreign Legion, or were from Laos or Cambodia. And over 43,000 of the wounded, same. Plus, on top of that, 2,755 French officers and soldiers to this day are still missing in action. So their losses were huge, costly. And you just can't bail after making that type of sacrifice. As far as South Vietnam, estimated somewhere around 60,000 Vietnamese soldiers killed in action or missing in action. They didn't keep casualty rates, but typically in most battles, it's usually about the same as killed. And for the Viet Minh, we don't know the exact count, but there are some historians that estimate as maybe as many as 200,000 Viet Minh soldiers were killed. And then sprinkle in another where somewhere between 200,000 to 400,000 civilians caught in the crossfire. So this little war that you never heard of resulted in about 500,000 deaths, give or take. So the Viet Minh want it all. The United States isn't quite sure what they want. The French are just like, just get me the hell out of here. As far as the communists, they just wanted the war to end. And they think that everybody should be forced to give something. They called for concessions from all sides. Why? Well, at this time, the Chi Coms and the Soviets were not getting along. So they themselves were divided. And as far as the big picture, neither China nor Russia wanted to push the French too hard because they wanted to get the war over with. They didn't want it to continue. They were terrified that if they pushed too hard, the United States is going to jump in and make the Cold War a hot war. Well, it was something they did not want. China was exhausted. 1949, Mao Zedong secures control of China. Then right off the bat, they jump into the Korean War. Plus, they didn't want the United States taking control of Vietnam and putting the United States on their southern border. And as for the Soviet Union, they weren't really concerned with what was going on in Asia. They were worried about what was going on in Europe. So long story short, they were afraid if they demanded too much, then that would cause the free world to engage the red world. So ironically, it was the communists that ultimately convinced the Viet Minh to back off their desire to get everything. Phan Van Dong met with Chinese foreign minister down here on the bottom, Zhou Enlai, as well as Soviet foreign minister, Vladislav Molotov. They basically told Phan Van Dong, give in. Just do whatever it takes to get the war over. But as it turned out, Phan Van Dong was offended by both. So he chose not to basically be buddy-buddy with Moscow nor Beijing. Instead, they were determined to do what they thought was best for them. And that would have a significant impact on the outcome. It was determined there would be full military disengagement. The Viet Minh would go back to their bases and would allow the French to pull out of the north. And Vietnam would be divided at the 17th parallel. There would be a North Vietnam, which would be controlled by the Viet Minh, and there would be a South Vietnam. But as for the division, oh, there it is. I knew I had a click somewhere. I knew I had the image on there. They would be like, man, I just screwed up the animation. But as for the division, only temporary. The Geneva Convention determined that they would wait 2 years to allow the dust to settle. And then after 2 years' time, there would be an election in which the people in the North and the South could vote on what did they want to do. Did they want to reunify? And if so, who's going to be in charge? Or do they want to remain separate? So, end of war, there would be an election come 56. There would also be a couple of other terms that I want you to get into your notes. They agreed no nation could establish military bases in Vietnam. No establishment of outside or foreign military bases in Vietnam, anywhere in Vietnam. Also, no outside military forces. So no foreign troops, no foreign bases. And lastly, no alliances. Neither North Vietnam or South Vietnam would be allowed to make military alliances with third parties. Now here's the funny thing. These are all points that they agreed upon. But in the end, the document was never signed. The only portion that was actually in writing and signed by representatives of the North, the South, and France was the ceasefire. All of the rest were basically gentlemen's agreements, handshakes. Now this business administration or business law here, right? There is, right?
Business administration,
right? Yeah, so you've taken like business law and stuff like that. Do you do contracts? Yeah, have you done learn a little bit about contract law?
No.
All right, maybe the other people know. What's the best form of contracts?
Written.
Why?
Because it's verbal.
Oh, exactly. What's the worst type of contracts?
Verbal.
Verbal. Why?
Because it's like he said, she said.
Exactly. And who wins in he said, she says? Don't know. So all of these things, no foreign troops, no foreign bases, no alliances, they're all gentlemen's agreements. They're all verbal contracts. So as a result, the United States is like, this is dumb. And they refuse to get involved. They refuse to endorse the agreement. They did take note, so they acknowledged what was agreed upon. And they did pledge not to use force to disturb the gentlemen's agreements. But while Dulles was doing this, I'm sure he had his fingers crossed behind his back. Now, why was the deal not endorsed? Simple. The Prime Minister of the new state of Vietnam, Ngo Dinh Diem, rejected the terms outright because he predicted accurately that there's going to be another war. It's only a matter of when. So he didn't want to do anything to hand tie his country. Because if the North Vietnamese came, he wanted to be able to make alliances. He wanted to be able to get foreign aid. And of course, the greatest irony is that apparently, when Pham Van Dong sent the report back to Hanoi, they agreed as well that there would be another war. Why? Simple. As Ho Chi Minh explained to his comrades, and I quote, "We are intoxicated with our repeated victories and want to fight on at all costs to finish. They see only the trees, not the whole forest. They are unaware that we are struggling in international conferences as well as on the battlefields in order to attain our goal. The next stage of the struggle will be a hard one, a complicated one. But that day will come." Ironically, he also reported that in the next stage, that his soldiers would be fighting against Americans. He predicted that as the French pull out, we would jump in. So, he knew he needed a new strategy on defeating America, because we're not the French. Questions?
I'm glad I didn't even try doing that on the video. Oh, we never got through that. Woo-hoo, good call on my part.
All right. So, Geneva Convention is complete. Nothing is signed. But, at least on paper, the war is over. Now what? Two different events took place. The first began on October 9th, 1954. As mandated in Geneva on October 9th, was the day that the French would turn over Hanoi to the Viet Minh. Now, the morning started off like most mornings in Vietnam. It was cold, it was damp, and the streets were empty and silent. Offices, shops were closed. There were still a few French armored cars parked in the main intersections, but they weren't rolling around the city. Then, at exactly 10 a.m., from the edge of the city, a distant hum arose. And it grew louder as General Giap's army appeared, marching and singing into the heart of Hanoi. Also at 10 a.m., the French military garrison, for the last time, lowered its flag in Hanoi City. The soldiers were then organized. They marched to the airport for removal. New armies in, old armies out. Slowly, windows and shutters begin to open. Red flags with yellow stars began to appear. People of Hanoi, responding to the urgings of propaganda officers, began shouting, "Free Vietnam!" And Ho Chi Minh, 1,000 years. Because after 9 years of war, the Viet Minh were back. And Ho Chi Minh and his government would take control. Now, as these images show, the streets were not exactly packed. You had mostly women and children out on the streets, just kind of probably out there because they're wondering what the heck is going on. But it was funny, when I found this picture, this kid right there, this little goofy grin that he had on his face caught my attention. And why? Well, he's got to be around maybe 10. So this is 1954. He's 10. In 10 years, he'd be 20. I wonder if he killed any American soldiers in the war that went around. In the South, things are very different. There was no even forced celebration. Because in the South, Go Dinh Diem would return from France, landing in Saigon as the new prime minister, tasked with spearheading the creation of the state of Vietnam. Dinh was 53 years old. He was French educated. He was a Catholic from Hue, just outside the imperial city. So he wasn't even a South Vietnamese. He was a Central Vietnamese. In his younger days, he had served in the provincial government. So he basically was a bureaucrat. But he worked for the French. He was a nationalist, but he was an anti-communist. During the war, he actually tried creating a non-communist nationalist group. It was known as the National Union Bloc. He attempted to be the third way. So we're not going to stay with the French. We're not going with Ho Chi Minh. But maybe we can make this free nationalist nation. Unfortunately, he was a pain in the ass. And he caught Ho Chi Minh's attention because he tried contacting some of the Viet Minh officers away. Because if you remember, when the Viet Minh were made, they were originally a union of communists and nationalists. But when Ho Chi Minh discovered Diem's actions, they actually put out a death warrant for him. They were going to send assassins to kill him. Well, he went to the French, hey, can I get some help? And the French were like, no, you've been talking smack about us. So he was actually forced to flee the country in 1950. For the next 4 years, he traveled the globe. He came to the United States, where he met many prominent American politicians, including a young Democrat senator from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts by the name of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. He also went to Belgium, he went to France, he even got to Rome. He met the freaking Pope, Pope Pius XII. But he was playing the international game of politics. He was calling himself the leading Vietnamese anti-communist nationalist. So he's meeting with all of these well-to-do, powerful people, and they start saying, oh, we'll give you some money, we'll support your cause, we'll support your party. Even though, truth be told, he really didn't represent his people. Diem had been in France, but when word of the beginning of the Geneva Convention occurred, he quickly traveled to Geneva, where he crossed paths with the emperor, Bo Dai. And Bo Dai decides, because of his popularity and his connections, to make him prime minister. Bo Dai hoped to draw the United States in. And they figured with the U.S. help, they could keep the communists at bay. But Bo Dai did not trust Diem. He didn't really like him. So in giving him the gig, he didn't give him full authority. He was more of a figurehead. So, for example, he was not given control over the military or the police. Bo Dai kept French people in high-ranking government positions. The French who were loyal to the emperor, not the prime minister. Bo Dai would even go so far as to say that Diem couldn't even control the Bank of Indochina, which was kind of like their Fed. Now we have the Federal Reserve that prints our money. Well, the emperor said the prime minister has no say over financial policies. So you can't make treaties. You can't take out loans. So what the heck is the point? Well, like I said, the emperor hoped to use Diem to get the United States involved. That's it. Why didn't he give him any more? Well, because the emperor really didn't like him. Because Diem had many, many character flaws. For instance, he always was dressed publicly in the immaculate white suits typically worn by the French colonial administrators. But unlike the French Europeans at this time, average height 5'9", 5'10", Diem was 4'11". And unlike a typical guy from France, kind of Caucasian-ish, Diem, well, he was rotund, kind of round, like a weeble, and obviously he had darker skin, which kind of clashed with the white suits. He also was so out of shape that he didn't look like he actually did a real day's work ever in his life. He was courageous. He was patriotic. But he was an eccentric. And he didn't really trust anybody, including members of his own family. So if you're a patriot and you don't trust your own people, how are you going to inspire them? He was a Catholic in a Buddhist country. And he had always lived on the margins of Vietnamese society. He lived off the French system, but he never embraced being Vietnamese, his own people, his own culture. So he didn't understand the history of his own country. He didn't understand the culture. And as if all of that wasn't problematic enough, he also had a huge ego. He believed that he was predestined for greatness. So as a result, he knew it all. And he was not willing to listen to anybody. So, he comes back from Geneva on June 7th, 1954. Whereas in Hanoi, the people eventually would come out and line the streets. In Saigon, there were only a few people who actually met his plane when he landed in the airport. Some of them were Catholic, but most were French officials. Instead of parading through the street in the eyes of all of the public, he drove in a closed car that had tinted windows at a high speed and made its way as quickly as possible to the palace. Ironically, I tried finding more pictures of his arrival in some of the newspaper sources that I used to get the pictures, and there's no other image but this. Because the people didn't even know he came back. But even those who knew didn't realize his intentions. He was not going to be a toady for Bo Dai. He had full intentions on basically taking power and ruling the state of Vietnam directly. Questions? Unfortunately, the state of Vietnam was messed up. All of the things that he had to overcome essentially made the likelihood of his success unfathomable. South Vietnam essentially descended into political chaos. There was a vacuum created. The French had tight control for so long, and now suddenly they let go. That everything was chaotic. Among the issues he had to deal with, it was a massive refugee crisis that erupted. Under the Geneva Accords, anyone was allowed to freely move between the DNZ, the demilitary zone, at the 17th parallel for 300 days. So no passports, no visas, no identification. If you were in the south and you wanted to go north, you could go north. If you were in the north and you wanted to go south, you could go south. But on day 300, the border would be shut. It was estimated that over those 300 days, somewhere between 600,000 and a million human beings went from North Vietnam south, most of whom were Catholics. But there was also movement north. About 100,000 Viet Minh soldiers march north, and about 70,000 civilians. Could you imagine that? Who's who? Who are you? Where are you coming from? Where are you going? Look at what happened to our country over the last couple of years when the president allowed 10 million people to come in. You know, Massachusetts is bankrupt. Many other states are bankrupt because of all the money that we had to pay to all of the illegals and the migrants. So much so that people, Americans, that suffered damage in North Carolina, Tennessee, Florida, they got no government help. California, there's no money. Chaos. Well, this because the scale is even more significant. Because you're only talking region about 100 miles or so. That's the width of central Vietnam. So imagine over a million people. Where are they going to go? What are you going to do with them? Where are they going to live? Where are they going to get food? Plus, there were French colonists who decided they were going to stay. Now, the French Union troops would leave. They would leave South Vietnam in 1956. But thousands of French civilians decided to stay on their plantations. And they stayed for a long time. The last date that I found on any type of population count, there was still about 17,000 French living in South Vietnam in 1967. Most of those people were wealthy. They were influential. They controlled the companies that harvested rubber, for example. Well, they didn't like Diem because Diem was anti-French. So they wanted him gone. Over 1 million refugees. Angry French. Plus, Diem also had to deal with the commander-in-chief of the army of the state of Vietnam. General Nguyen Van He, or Hin. He had served as chief of state for the Vietnamese National Army. He was a Francophile. He loved the French. He loved the French colonial system. He wanted to keep the French in place. And he was ready to get rid of Diem, literally the moment Diem landed on the tarmac. By August, Hin began making a series of public statements against the prime minister, claiming things that, like, South Vietnam needs a strong leader, or a popular leader, or a leader who's actually a leader of the people. He also stupidly started bragging how he was going to plan a coup d'etat. Well, unfortunately, the CIA found out about the coup, and they stopped it before it could ever get going. Hin was forced to flee to Paris, where he would actually be made a general in the French army, making him one of the few people ever to have a military command in multiple countries. Once Hin fled, Diem put a puppet in, controlling the army. Nguyen Van Vi. So, he had a problem with the army, but Diem got lucky and was able to take control over it a little bit. But he also had to deal with his, well, the South Vietnamese version of basically the mafia. The Bien Chu Kien. They were like the Mexican drug gangs. The Bien Chu Kien were a crime syndicate. They were kind of like the mafia. They started in the 1920s. They started making their money by kidnapping people and holding them for ransom. They also engaged in piracy. But during World War II, they, like so many other groups, joined in the war effort against the Japanese. So they started getting military aid from the Allies. Money, weapons, vehicles. When the war ended, they switched to fighting the French. But the French bribed them and convinced them to fight the communists instead. Why would they do this? Well, very simple. The French also, besides giving Bien Chu Kien money, they also allowed him to take control of the casinos and most of the prostitution that was utilized in Saigon, from which this group received tremendous money. Fast forward to 1949, Bo Dai contacts the commander of the Bien Chu Kien, Bay Vien. He agreed that all non-communists should be fighting together against the Viet Minh. But to get him on their side, Bo Dai made him a major general and allowed him to organize his own divisions. So they wore American-made uniforms. They had American-made helmets. They had American-made guns. They drove American-made Jeeps. But they weren't within the regular army. And they were sizable. By 1954, they had 5 regular infantry divisions. So that's roughly 150,000 men. Plus, they also had 2 divisions of like special forces, shock troops. And on top of that, they controlled the police in Saigon. So who's really in charge? Well, when the French withdrew, the emperor renewed the deal. But this also meant that they were not loyal to Diem. So the prime minister now had to deal with this group, which had a force almost as lethal as his own army, which he barely controlled. And on top of that, there was nothing. There was no government whatsoever out in the countryside. During the war, French authority virtually ceased to exist, but now that the French were gone, it only got worse. Now, during the war, some of the peasants lived underneath the Viet Minh. They were ruled by them, they supported them, they fought with them. But in other parts of South Vietnam, cults emerged, religious factions. 2 of the most promising and powerful religious sects would also engage in politics. The first is Cao Dai. Cao Dai is a religion that kind of blends traditions of multiple faiths. It's known technically as a syncretic religion. It has aspects of Taoism, it has aspects of Buddhism, but it also has aspects of, you know, local Vietnamese customs and traditions. But it's kind of like an end-of-days cult. They believe that humanity was in its final days, and that Judgment Day was coming. So only those who sought salvation under the rules of the faith would basically be part of God's plans. They were very intolerant because part of God's plans did not include allowing people who thought differently than them to be in their space, even though they were a religion. They weren't afraid to engage in acts of terrorism and assassination, because they believed that even if they died, that because they were faithful, they would rejoin God the Father in heaven, allowing them to break the cycle of reincarnation. Had a little aspect of Christianity as well. As far as the Hoa Hoa, well, that was another amalgamation. that had a little Buddhism in it, that had a little ancestor worship in it, that had a lot of deities, animals, rituals, also had a little bit of Confucianism in them, and of course the White Lotus religion. This was anti-modernistic and anti-urban. They believe that you can only find salvation by living in the countryside and living one with nature. So they weren't into automobiles and electricity and radios, because they thought that clouded one's vision, to say the least. But here's the catch. Both Cao Dai and Hoa Hoa hated Catholics. So, Diem, being a Catholic, had little hopes of controlling these, particularly once they started making their own armed militias to defend their villages and resist Diem's control. Questions? All right, I'm done. We come back. We're going to see how Diem would slowly take control. And then once he got the upper hand, then we're going to see what happened in North Vietnam. And we're going to sit back and be like, oh my God. And then once we get through that, maybe we'll start looking at what happened with JFK. I don't know. I want to get your second test in before break. So we'll see where we're at. All right? Cool. Stay warm. Peace out. Or to put it another way, get out. I'm going home.